Cars have always been greasy, oily, and very rough and tumble male kinds of objects, in short, endowed with all of the traits of maleness. Cars are parked right in the center of the gender myths and realities of American culture, in fact. Perhaps because some of the men at General Motors a while ago felt they had run out of ideas of how to improve what was fast becoming the American favorite consumer product, they did something radical.
The fair sex of America strikes again. This time in the nation's auto industry, where women designers have opened up a whole new field of employment. Here in the styling studios of General Motors, they select fabrics, colors, accessories, and help design cars inside and out. Today's modern woman, no longer just a voice from the back seat, has the last word in the purchase of 7 out of 10 cars. So the feminine taste is represented by these girls, a few of the many damsels of design.
In the mid-1950s, GM hired a team of 10 pioneers, designers, women. They called them the damsels of design, which might have been a questionable move, but an all-female design team of 10 who were seen to have the aesthetic sensibility that American car consumers could appreciate.
This champagne white is trimmed with pearls. A notepad in the glove compartment for thoughts while waiting. If it's a dark, overcast day, these talented designers are prepared. In fact, they've already led the way with six-way seats, easy-to-reach dashboard controls, and upholstery that won't snag their nylons.
They managed to have an impact on the cars and culture at GM. Rebecca Veit says she's designing women columnist for Core 77. But Veit says in the end, at that time, there wasn't really much of a future for women in the design field in the American auto industry.
You know, their story of the damsels of design really starts actually with a man. His name was Harley Earl, and he was the VP of design at GM. And he really recognized before his contemporaries that women in the post-war era really had a lot more buying power, and they were making a lot more decisions about the home and kind of the car as an extension of the home. And so he really wanted to bring in, I think, what he would call kind of as the feminine touch to GM's car design and kind of lure in kind of this new market of consumers. And GM's PR department really saw a great opportunity to kind of promote the women they were bringing in and dub them the damsels of design.
Now, I'm sure they must have been thrilled with that name, but were they actual designers?
They were. Earl really was recruiting from industrial design programs. He recruited heavily from Pratt Institute in Brooklyn and also from Cranbrook in Detroit. So the 10 women that he hired were all industrial designers. And, you know, they really, everything I've read, they really kind of hated the name being called the damsels. They really felt like it didn't give them a fair shake as designers.
Yeah, I'm shocked by that. How did they interact inside the company? Any indication? And what did they actually get to work on?
So 6 of them went directly into GM's automotive design department, and they were placed in the interiors department. So they were really designing interiors from the ground up. The PR department at GM really promoted them kind of as decorators. So, you know, saying, oh, they're throwing around fabrics and choosing colors. But really, they were doing the exact same work that the men there were doing. And then they also worked on exhibition designs for the styling department, which is now known as GM Design, which is what Harley Earl was the head of. One thing that GM specifically did was promote them with what they called the Feminine Auto Show. And so this was really a time for them to kind of show their taste, show their design prowess. They designed 2 to 3 automobiles each, and really put in some interesting kind of innovations. In the Corvette, they had the first retractable seatbelt. They had things like light-up makeup mirrors, which weren't really a thing at the time. They had kind of fun storage consoles for picnics and for umbrellas. And they also put in some new safety features, thinking about children in the car. They had some of the first safety latches that could be controlled on the dashboard for children in the back seat. Things like that did come through at the time. And I think there were a lot of women in America as well as Europe who were designing, who were kind of flying under the radar, either because they weren't taken seriously or because they were working with their husbands and they were kind of in their shadow at the time.
Was the culture of design changed at General Motors in any significant way by this program?
You know, it was a kind of a brief blip, unfortunately. They brought them in around 1955. In 1958, Harley Earl retired. And the man who came after him kind of famously said, you know, no women are going to stand next to my male senior designers. So by the early 60s, they were gone. There was one woman who stayed on. Her name was Suzanne Vanderbilt, and she kind of tenaciously worked her way up through the ranks at GM for the next 23 years. But I read an interview with her, and the interviewer asked her, you know, how many women in the early 70s were working at GM? And she said, well, you know, there's about one in every design studio, so six total. And that was the exact same number that were working on automobile design when she started in 1955. So unfortunately, there wasn't huge progress. I think if Harley Earl had not retired in 1958, I think that it might be a different story.
And I think it's probably progressive compared to designers who are male back then, because I think male designers probably were designing for men, or they were designing to express their own personal signature, almost as an extension of their own ego. So in a sense, the women are really leapfrogging far ahead of the design aesthetic of what they encounter there at General Motors.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And, you know, something that the women were doing were they were kind of thinking a little bit more holistically, and they were thinking about how people were using the interiors of the car, how families were going to be using the interiors of the car. And, you know, people like Suzanne Vanderbilt, who did stay on at GM, in the 60s, she came up actually with a patent because people were complaining that the seats in the cars were so uncomfortable. She came up with a patent for an inflatable seat back, which you could kind of pump up or decrease the air pressure and give you lumbar support. And that was actually something that GM looked over and didn't put into production until decades later.
You're someone who is very familiar with the design culture of the 21st century. How would you say the ways in which men and women express themselves artistically in design has a different dynamic than it ever had back in this period that you study?
You know, I think the women who were referred to as the damsels of design by GM, they really thought of themselves as designers for men and women, and they didn't see themselves as designers just for women. I think that kind of design thinking was very forward at the time, and I think it carries over kind of to today, that people are designing for people, and, you know, female designers today don't want to be thought of as designing just for women. They want to be thought of just designing for everybody.
Rebecca Veit, Designing Women columnist for Core 77. Thank you so much.
Thank you, John.